The Richland School Board held a productive session Wednesday night, reaching several key decisions regarding district property and staffing. In a significant move for the future of the district, the board formally agreed to the purchase of part of the campus property and the assumption of the Land and Water Conservation Fund grant. This project has already been approved by the county board. The issue now heads to the Richland Center City Council for final approval. Student fees have been eliminated for this school year, other than for extracurricular activities such as activity passes, the band uniform dry cleaning fee, and sports fees. And also, the meeting highlighted the continued support of the community and various organizations. The board expressed its gratitude as all presented donations were officially accepted, including significant contributions from the Richland School District Foundation and the Richland Center Athletic Booster Club. These gifts will provide vital funding for district programs and activities in the coming year. Staffing for the 2026-27 school year was another primary focus, with the board successfully filling several key vacancies. New appointments were confirmed for positions in alternative education and elementary writing, along with the hiring of a new second grade teacher. These additions ensure the district remains well prepared to welcome students back in the fall with a full complement of educators. There was also an open enrollment update. The district will open with more students than it had at any point last year. The Richland Center City Plan Commission recently addressed several significant land use and zoning matters affecting the community. One key item involved the proposed conveyance of city-owned property at 929 West Seminary Street to Lydia's House Ministries. The commission recommended approval of this transfer to the city council, finding that the continued operation of the site as a transitional housing shelter aligns with the residential designation of the future land use map. Because the facility has operated continuously since before 1990, the commission determined it constitutes a legal non-conforming use, meaning no further zoning changes are required for the transfer to proceed. In addition to the property conveyance, the commission reviewed a proposed amendment to Chapter 485 of the Code of Ordinances regarding electronic message center signs on public property. This amendment seeks to authorize these signs for governmental and educational entities while establishing clear performance standards for brightness, display duration, and residential buffering. While the proposal aims to close a current gap in the sign code that affects facilities like the Brewer Public Library, the commission recommended this to the city council for approval. Finally, the commission considered a comprehensive draft ordinance designed to modernize the city's residential zoning. The proposal would repeal chapters 402 and 403 to create a unified R1, R2 single and two family residential district. A major component of this update is the introduction of standards for owner-occupied accessory dwelling units, which are intended to provide flexible housing options while maintaining neighborhood character. Similar to the discussion on sign amendments, this ordinance was the subject of significant debate. No formal action was taken during the session, and the commission expects further review and revisions in future meetings. The Wisconsin Department of Justice Division of Criminal Investigation has launched an inquiry into a fatal officer-involved shooting that occurred in Madison's Marquette neighborhood yesterday. The incident began around 1 p.m. when four officers from the Madison Police Department responded to reports of an individual allegedly checking parked vehicles. When officers attempted to make contact, the subject fled the area on a bicycle. Law enforcement reestablished contact with the subject at approximately 1:35 p.m. near the intersection of South Baldwin and Williamson Streets. A physical altercation broke out during the encounter, and officials state the subject brandished a knife, resulting in an injury to one of the responding officers. While another officer attempted to subdue the subject using a taser, the deployment was unsuccessful. The injured officer then discharged their firearm, striking the individual. A knife was later recovered from the scene by investigators. Emergency medical services were called to the scene and rendered life-saving measures before transporting the subject to a local hospital where he was ultimately pronounced deceased. In addition to the officer wounded by the knife, a second officer sustained injuries during the struggle. Both have since been treated and released from medical care. Following standard agency policy, all four responding officers are cooperating with the Division of Criminal Investigation and have been placed on administrative leave. DCI is currently leading the investigation with support from multiple regional agencies and will submit its final report to the Dane County District Attorney's Office upon completion. On Monday, a fatal crash occurred on I-90 westbound near Highway 12 in Sauk County. An SUV and a pickup truck, both traveling eastbound, collided, causing the pickup truck to cross the median into westbound lanes, where it struck two semi-units. The pickup truck's driver, 76-year-old Terry Neidiger of Springfield, Illinois, sustained fatal injuries, while one of the semi-drivers was treated for minor injuries. Westbound lanes of the interstate remained closed for approximately 6 hours following the collision. The Wisconsin State Patrol is investigating the incident as a hit and run, as the driver of the SUV fled the scene in a separate vehicle. Anyone who witnessed the crash is asked to contact the Wisconsin State Patrol. The Plain Fire and EMS 3-day celebration will be held this Friday through Sunday at Plain Community Park. Featured at the event will be live music by Best Practice on Friday night starting at 7 o'clock. Saturday at 10 o'clock will be the Travis Stanichka Memorial Volleyball Tournament. A beanbag tournament gets underway at 1 o'clock, and Road Crew will perform beginning at 7 o'clock. On Sunday, there will be a circus parade at 11, and a chicken barbecue will be served starting at noon. At 1 o'clock, Leather and Lace will take the stage, and a children's pedal pole will be held. All weekend, there will be softball tournaments, carnival rides, inflatables, food, cold beverages, and more. Please, no carry-ins. More information can be found on the Plain Fire and EMS Facebook page. In a significant leadership transition within the upper chamber, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has been officially named the new chairman of the U.S. Senate Committee on the Budget. The appointment, confirmed by the Republican Conference, comes at a somber moment for the Senate following the tragic passing of Senator Lindsey Graham, whose vacancy Johnson will now fill. Stepping into the role with a clear sense of purpose and respect for his predecessor, Senator Johnson described the late Senator Graham as a true American patriot and a cherished colleague. As he assumes the gavel for the remainder of the year, Johnson has signaled an aggressive fiscal agenda aimed at addressing what he describes as the pressing challenges facing the nation's economy. His primary objectives include defining the scope of the current fiscal challenge and increasing oversight to expose fraud within various government programs. Senator Tammy Baldwin is spearheading a push for the Bipartisan Insulin Act, calling on the Senate Majority Leader to bring the legislation to the floor for a critical vote. The proposed law aims to cap out-of-pocket insulin costs at $35 per month for all Americans, a move that would provide immediate financial relief to millions who rely on the life-saving medication. With 60 bipartisan co-sponsors, the bill has already secured the support necessary to overcome a filibuster, signaling a rare moment of consensus in Washington aimed at tackling the skyrocketing costs of chronic care. In her appeal, Senator Baldwin emphasized the dire choices facing hundreds of thousands of Wisconsinites and families all across the country. As inflation and rising costs strain household budgets, many individuals are forced to choose between essential needs like rent and food or the medications they need to survive. Baldwin noted that the Insulin Act is designed to address the root market issues driving high list prices while simultaneously fostering competition and broadening access. By establishing a $35 monthly cap, the legislation seeks to ensure that no American is forced to ration their insulin due to financial barriers. The Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development recently released the latest employment estimates for June 2026, which indicate a broader seasonal shift in the labor market. According to the data, preliminary unemployment rates increased in all 72 Wisconsin counties over the month. This statewide trend reflects a cooling from previous months as the region continues to navigate its ongoing economic recovery and development efforts. Within southwest Wisconsin, Iowa and Sauk counties both reported an unemployment rate of 2.8%. Richland and Vernon counties each saw rates of 3.1%, while Grant County followed closely at 3.2%. Crawford County reported the highest unemployment rate among the group at 3.8%. These figures come as local officials and community leaders continue to focus on infrastructure repairs and long-term economic growth following a turbulent spring season. This segment of the News at Noon begins with Mr. Ken Thede.
Robert Aiken left on record for very amusing as well as very instructive accounts of the times when graphically it depicts the voyage in vogue through Richland County. And now for a Richland County Historical Society history moment. Here's the rest of the story. According to U.S. GenWeb, Info Richland, 1906, Chapter 3. Robert Aiken tells the story as follows, and I quote for the entire story. When we arrived in Rockbridge, November 5th, 1845, there were 16 men working at the mill. The provisions from Platteville, 75 miles away, and no roads, that from Orion to Rockbridge at the time, meant that they had to provide a supply to the mill. Two men of some experience were sent to blaze trees, and three men started for Orion on November 10th to cut a road that would go through with a team or what would be a load of wagon. I went for the men, getting cattle and sleds, and the men at the mill commenced to cut the road to meet us. It was a good day's walk to Orion. On the third day after we got there, we had our loads and started on our expedition back to Rockbridge. We camped for the first night at what was called Indian Creek. A deer made its appearance. Three or four men started in pursuit. They were eager to get a shot. They were hungry for food. I was the first to fire. As the gun cracked, the deer bounded off, and I lost sight of it, returning to camp, while the others went in pursuit of that animal. In about a half an hour, they had returned, bringing the deer, which had fallen dead. After a running of a short distance, it bled out. We roasted, broiled, and stewed the meat, got up the next night to eat it, and not one slice of deer was left when breakfast was over the next morning. We doubled teams up the hill, passed over the south fork of what was known as Ash Creek. At the Booth farm, one of the men found a bee tree, and we got a wash tub full of honey. We camped at the spring where Thompson's lived. For some time, the men who had cut and put up the hay there with their teams went on for the next night to the mill, some cutting stringers for a bridge so that we could cross Ash Creek with our wagons, while others made the puncheons for the cover, which we took all day. The men went out to hunt again, and one of them brought back a fine buck. Next day we camped at Durfee Bovey's farm. The timber was awful. The following night we got to Kingler's Springs. We could call that Ash Swamp, not Ash Creek. The cattle were mired in. We finally got to Rocky Branch the next night. We stopped there until men cut the road to the muddy branch of Center Creek, and that took us about a day and a half. My partner and I went to Center Creek, where the men that morning were cutting the road. We followed the blazes of Brush Creek, and the men thought that they were there that night. We had, in the meantime, cut another road to Fancy Creek, where the others met us, and there we had the jollification and regular old pioneer drunk, if you will, as we celebrated our roads that we had built. It only took us a barrel of whiskey to do that and accomplish the task. This might not shock the extremist, hearing that five men would have drank a barrel of whiskey, but it was fashionable for the time. The next day, a guy by the name of Sam Swinehart and I went to Orion for provisions. There we had, as it were, a dance and celebration at Captain Smith's residence. When we got there at dark, the boys and the girls began to assemble for the festivities of the evening. Music and dance was a part of the evening, a full-blast party, if you will. Listen next week for the history of Richland County about Brimmer's Woolen Mill.
Today's History Moment is a service of the Richland County Historical Society. members of the Historical Society enjoy reminiscing with the Achy Breaky newsletter. A strong membership base keeps the Historical Society viable and active by promoting the study and appreciation of local history, the sponsorship of programs devoted to local history, and the maintenance and access to the Achy School Museum. Annual memberships are just $10 for an individual or family, $20 for a business, or $100 for a lifetime individual or family membership. Memberships can be mailed to Richland County Historical Society, 213 South Central Avenue, apartment number 1, Richland Center, Wisconsin, 53581. You can also learn more at richlandcountyhistoricalsociety.weebly.com.
Thank you, Ken. The Wisconsin housing market experienced a significant surge in both sales activity and property values as it reached the middle of 2026. According to the latest data from the Wisconsin Realtors Association, June home sales climbed 5.9% compared to the same month in 2025, while the statewide median price also rose by 5.9% to reach $360,000. This upward trend was consistent with year-to-date performance, which saw sales increase by 3.7% and the median price grow by 6.3% to $340,000 over the first 6 months of the year. Inventory levels remained a critical factor in the market's dynamics, while the supply held steady at 4.2 months, unchanged from June of 2025. It remains below the six-month threshold typically associated with a balanced market. However, there are signs of improvement in availability as new listings rose by 4.8% and total active listings increased by 3.3% over the last 12 months. These additional listings contributed directly to the solid sales volume recorded during June, which is traditionally the strongest month for closings. Despite a modest 33 basis point decline in mortgage rates compared to the previous year, affordability continues to be a major hurdle, particularly for those looking to enter the market for the first time. The Wisconsin Affordability Index fell 1.7% over the past year as rising home prices outpaced both the slight reduction in borrowing costs and weak growth in median family income. The scarcity of starter homes is especially pronounced. The share of listings priced under $350,000 has plummeted from 68.9% in June of 2021 to 46.2% in June of 2026. This shift reflects a broader trend of rapid price appreciation, with median prices increasing over 40% during the past 5 years. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is officially accepting applications for the E-Cycle Wisconsin Electronics Collection Grants, aimed at enhancing recycling accessibility across the state. These grants provide essential project funding to establish new electronics collection sites or to host specialized collection events scheduled between October of 2026 and December 2027. Eligible applicants, including businesses, local and tribal governmental bodies, and nonprofit organizations, have until August 31st at 5 p.m. to submit their proposals. This round of funding offers a total of $150,000 with maximum awards of $5,000 for individual collection events and up to $15,000 for the development of permanent collection sites. A primary goal of the program is to expand the recycling network into underserved regions. Priority for funding will be given to projects located in counties that currently lack permanent E-Cycle Wisconsin collection sites open to all residents. The initiative builds on a successful track record. Since 2022, the DNR has distributed more than $590,000 to projects spanning 30 counties. These past efforts have successfully supported the creation of 9 permanent sites and 107 one-day collection events through December of 2026.